For me, the most difficult literary form to read in the Bible is the genealogy. Anybody else have this issue? I call them the Begatitudes. Abraham begat Isaac, who begat Jacob, who begat Judah, and on and on and on. Now, it's important, and that's why they're there. Lineage is very important in the Hebrew Scriptures. In the Gospel of Matthew, it begins with the genealogy. Why? Because the author wants us to know that Jesus is in the Davidic lineage and therefore is eligible to be the Messiah. So lineage matters. We know from biology 101 the role of the male in transmitting DNA. We also know from Christianity 101 the role of a father in training up a child and making good on the vows made at the time of infant baptism. That a child will be taught the faith and raised up, and that a parent will embody the values of the Christian faith, of love and Christian ethics, so that the child will learn. We understand that. Both are important, but this morning I'm lifting up and celebrating the parenting dimension of being a father. Because when you compare the two, one is really a biological consequence. The other is an ongoing decision that lasts a lifetime. To parent and train up a child. So we celebrate that and the role of fathers. We celebrate men who step up and embrace the challenge and blessings of being a father or a mentor, either one. Please join with me in reading the scripture found out of the book of Exodus, found in your bulletins. It's a very brief one, one of the commandments. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. May the Lord bless the reading of this word. It is a commandment in what was an honor culture. Of course, mothers and fathers would be accorded a certain amount of honor. But interestingly enough, when you do a word study on the Hebrew word for honor, kadah, it means, yes, to glorify, but it also means to grieve. It means to be rich, but it also means to be a burden. Maybe that's a great way to illustrate the paradox of fathers. How many times has it been that I've finished a Father's Day sermon or referenced the importance of the ideal of fatherhood and had a member in good faith take me aside and say, "But preacher, you don't understand. My father was abusive. My father was mean. I don't love my father. My father didn't love me. My father was a drunk, Papa was a rolling stone, you name it." There's all these different reasons and excuses for not honoring or loving one's father, and I find myself reflexively responding, if you cannot honor your own father, then honor the ideal of fatherhood and possibly the person your dad would have been had he not been so consumed with his own brokenness. Bearing in mind that we have a tendency to hold our parents to a much higher ideal than we hold ourselves to, don't we? It's not easy being a father. It's challenging. My own father realized this in his life. He was raised in a small rural town in Illinois, Effingham. Went to the University of Missouri. The World War II broke in. He marched down to the post office, signed up, found out that you could get an extra $15 a month if you joined the paratroops. So he's in the 82nd Airborne. He jumped over the Rhine River as part of Operation Market Garden, was in the Battle of the Bulge, wounded twice, marched on Berlin. The war was over. He came home, finished on the GI Bill to finish school. Got into journalism through radio, married my mother, and then he began realizing his dream that he always wanted. He always wanted six children. He's an only child. He always wanted six kids. Maybe he was lonely when he was a kid. And then life dealt him a very cruel hand. It gave him six kids. And I think it's fair to say my dad was just overwhelmed by the family circus. I mean, my mom was an artist, a little bit bohemian. Housekeeping was not really her deal. And so I can remember him saying, you know, if I wasn't looking for it, I'd be stepping on it. You know, looking for a comb or trying to find something. Not to mention the challenge that comes with paying bills and housing and feeding and clothing six children and putting, when you can, put money aside for college. And so it was quite a challenge for my dad. And then, you know, it was quite a contrast. In those days, the 50s and the 60s, then you go to the television, it may have been black and white, but you turn on a sitcom, and there's the TV dad, and in a 30-minute episode, makes parenting look so easy. You know, whether it was Leave It to Beaver or Father Knows Best or the Andy Griffith Show, you know, the dad sat down, encountered the problem, went to commercial, came back, had thought about it, had meditated on it, and then slowly unrolled the solution. The last commercial being followed by the denouement in which everything is restored to prosperity and happiness again. The only problem is it's not that easy, is it? It's more challenging. Put yourself in the role, the perspective, the point of view of the father in the parable of the prodigal son. You've got one kid who's immature and kind of rambling and restless, demands his inheritance. If you don't give it to him, you're a miser. If you do give it to him, you're an enabler. So you give him his money, he goes away. Finally, he returns, and what do? How do you welcome him, if at all? Do you wait till he rings the doorbell about 10 times and then open up the door and go, well, look who's come back. Yeah, Mr. Know-it-all. The guy who had all the answers, the guy who wanted all his money, and now you're broke, aren't you? And you're a failure. But he didn't do that, did he? No. Went running down the road, greeted his son, embraced him, gave him a new coat, said, kill the fatted calf. We're going to celebrate and have a party. Why? Because this, my son, was lost, and now he is found. But in the course of doing that, he had another realization. His oldest son was lost as well. In what way was he lost? Well, in his resentment, this son of yours comes back. I've been working all this time diligently. I show up every day. I work hard. And do you throw a party for me? No. But when this son of yours, he doesn't even claim his own brother, when this son of yours returns, you throw him a party and give him a new coat. And his father has this realization, oh my gosh, you've been doing all the right things, but for all the wrong reasons. You probably don't even want to be here, do you? But somehow through guilt or some misplaced sense of obligation, you do this job. My gosh, my son, everything that I have is yours. So we had to figure it out. It's not easy as a parent, is it? It's challenging. Sibling rivalries. Carl Jung once said the most profound problems in life are not solved, but rather they are outgrown, and I like that. Teenagers are never solved. They're simply outgrown. They become 25-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 35-year-olds, and then you can almost become friends. They're wonderful people. They bring your grandchildren to you, and it's a wonderful thing. The challenge, I think, is that it's the type of love that God has for us. We're called to embrace as parents. It's not contingent love. It's not performance-based love. That's easy. Oh my gosh, Tommy, you hit another home run. I love you, man. You're just amazing. Susie, once again, you're the prima ballerina. You did another amazing performance. I love you so much. You see, it's got the connotation of I love you because you're a high performer. I love you because you meet my expectations. I love you because we basically want the same things for you. But agape love is different than that. Agape love is in spite of the fact that you've disappointed me. In spite of the fact that here we are in the cookie aisle of the grocery store and you're 2 years old and you're throwing a tantrum and I'm embarrassed and I don't know how to make you stop crying, I still love you. In spite of the fact that I loaned you the family car, and now I went out this morning and I've got to go to work and it's on empty, the gas is on empty, and there's a dent in the front fender, and you didn't say a word about it, I love you anyway. Agape embodies perseverance, persistence, and patience. Agape is the type of love that will allow you to outgrow any situation until the time comes for your denouement in the 30-minute episode and you can embrace the peace and serenity that comes. The goal, after all, is to raise an autonomous, self-reliant human being. And sometimes we forget that as parents, don't we? I was a helicopter parent, so I get it. We're supposed to be about gradually moving away, gradually letting go. After all, if you're telling your high school kid what to wear and what not to wear, what are they going to do the first day of college? Maybe they'll get up and go, I'll show mom or I'll show dad. I'll wear the most outrageous outfit imaginable. We've got to let go. And at first, there's pain and anguish in that, but it's followed by liberation. Oh my gosh. You know, the first day your kid gets, your 16-year-old gets their driver's license, it's a day of fear and trembling. The second day you go, this is wonderful. I just quit the chauffeur business. My Uncle Searle used to kind of embody that with a saying that he had regarding his adult children. He would listen patiently to the trials and tribulations that they were undergoing, and then he would say, mercifully, it's not my problem. It's your problem. Figure it out. Self-reliant parents are called to create and shape self-reliant human beings. But in the course of doing that, dads make mistakes, don't they? We know that from the scriptures. Adam was never able to sort out the jealousy between Cain and Abel. Noah was great at building a boat, but he embarrassed and humiliated his adult children by being caught in a compromising situation. Amram, the father of Moses, stood by and watched as his baby boy was placed in a reed basket and was floated down the Nile River. Abraham, who appeared to want a son badly, that was his lamentation, Lord, give me a son, finally got one, and then he decides that God is telling him to sacrifice Isaac on a mountain. David stood by and watched as his adult son assaulted his adult daughter. It's not just biblical dads who get it wrong. I gathered with some old buddies from college a couple of weeks ago, and my good friend, my college roommate, in a moment of stark confession and candid expression, said, you know what? I was a really bad father. I was a bad dad. I was absentee. He went on to say he was so intent on getting on the path in New Jersey, the subway, and getting into Wall Street by 6 in the morning and working out there and jumping on the market and making a lot of money and falling prey to that little equation that we dads sometimes do. You know, we got married, so I need to be a provider. I need to be a provider, so we need to have a great house and expensive luxury automobiles and go to expensive schools. So I'm out traveling. I'm working overtime. I'm doing it all for you. I'm doing it all for you on your behalf. Servant leadership, that's why I'm doing this. That's why I'm never at home. And we forget that there is nothing that can compensate our partners or our children for our chronic absence. Nothing. In the movie Parenthood, the character Todd, he's kind of a zany character played by Keanu Reeves, he shares that his father was very abusive. He woke him up in the morning by flicking cigarette butts in his face and said, "Hey, idiot, get up and make breakfast." And then he goes on to muse to the extent that a 19-year-old boy can muse and be philosophical. And he says, you know, when you think of it in our society, you have to have a license to buy a dog, to drive a car. Heck, you even need a license to catch a fish. But anybody, any old person can be a dad. No mandatory, compulsory lessons, no orientation. Just, you're supposed to figure it out. And not everybody is able to do that. Every dad makes mistakes, and it's sobering, it's humiliating. In the television show Modern Family, Cam and Mitchell decide they want to take their daughter Lily to Disneyland, and they want to be super parents, super dads, so they fit her out in this bungee cord sort of child leash thing. They're going around Disneyland, and she's on a leash. They're thinking everybody would say, oh my gosh, what amazing fathers they are because they're so concerned about the well-being of their child. Instead, everybody was looking at them with disapproving, judgmental looks. Oh my goodness, you have your kid on a leash? a dog leash. So they realized they'd made a huge mistake, you know. In doing that, Mitchell said later he hadn't felt so judged since he'd gone to Whole Foods without his grocery canvas bag. The teen idol David Cassidy, some of you, I'm dating myself there, but he's not even living anymore, but he once was a teen idol. And he was interviewed, and I remember the interview, they said, how did you get into this gig anyway? Why did you become a singer? And he said, I wanted my father to be proud of me. His father was a famous actor. I wanted my dad to be proud. And the reporter said, oh, and how proud he must be. And Cassidy surprised her by saying, no, my father's jealous of my fame and my success. My father despises me. Jimmy Pearsall, who became a Major League Baseball player when I was a kid for the Cleveland Indians, he wrote a book entitled Fear Strikes Out. It goes on to tell the narrative of his father, who was a very demanding, overbearing, dominating presence in his life, who informed him he would become a professional baseball player. He had no choice about it. And his father would drill him, practice him. He was all over him. His father was the type of dad who'd watch a baseball game and he went 4 for 5, and they'd be driving home and his dad would say, I can't believe you struck out and took a called third strike that time. Instead of saying 4 for 5, what an amazing game you had. He did go on to fulfill his father's dream for him and become a Major League Baseball player. He just had a mental breakdown during the course of a game, found himself in a psychiatric institution. The counselor was talking to him, and the counselor began to give critical statements regarding his father's parenting style. Pearsall was very defensive. He said, no, you don't understand. My dad only wants the best for me. In fact, if it wasn't for my dad, I wouldn't be where I am today. As we prepare to go watch the results of the U.S. Open this afternoon in Pebble Beach, we're reminded that it was in 1913, U.S. Open in Boston. A caddy by the name of Francis Ouimet, who worked at the club, was invited by a club member to play in the tournament. Kind of unheard of, especially back then when class distinctions were so rigid. He went home and asked his father for the entry fee. His father was of French heritage, Ouimet, and was a day laborer. And his father said, no, I won't give you the money. You have no business playing in that tournament. That is for those people, those aristocrats, those people with money who always turn up their noses at us. They will never let you in their group. Don't do that to yourself. His father felt like he was saving his son rejection. But his son's dreams were different than the father's dreams. And his son found the money elsewhere. He entered the tournament and he won. He beat Harry Vardon from England and he won the tournament. And at least in the movie, there's this touching scene when he's being held up on the shoulders, he and his caddy Eddie are being held up on the shoulders of people, and he starts telling people to give money for Eddie as a gratuity to his caddy. Eddie was like 12 years old. It's true, you can look it up. So people are holding up dollar bills, and Francis is gathering them up to give to his caddy, and then he grabs $1 bill and looks at the hand, and the hand looks familiar. And the hand is attached to the arm, that's attached to the body, that's attached to the face, that is his father. His father's affirming him by making a contribution. In other words, his father finally got it. What was true for his generation, not necessarily true for his son's generation. Probably the most chronic error that dads make is neglect. They don't intend it that way. It's rationalized as I'm working hard, I'm out there working, I'm doing it for you. And that's understandable. Some jobs require long hours, some jobs require travel. But let me tell you, there's 168 hours in the week. And as a dad, if you haven't allocated at least a portion of those towards being with your children, then you're not doing it correctly. There is no excuse. There is no possible excuse for not being with your children and spending time with them. They process that as chronic rejection, and it's damaging and it's painful. So figure it out, even if you need to find a new job. Good dads show up and they step up. They understand the thing of voice imprinting. A child, a newborn in the species, hears their parent's voice and they imprint, they follow that person. That becomes their role model. Probably the most frightening thing about parenthood is when you realize that your kid is not doing what you say, they're doing what you do. Learning is mimetic. They're copying you. So be careful about being a hypocrite, because they're watching you and they're copying you. I remember sitting in the pew of the First Congregational Church in San Antonio, Texas, and my dad was the lay leader that Sunday. So he was in the pulpit leading the Lord's Prayer, and he was doing it from memory, and he left out a line and literally brought the prayer to its knees, I guess you could say. So there was a little bit of a chuckle and a family stigma around that, that he did that and made that mistake. But it dawns on me that long after the stigma has passed away, the vivid image of my father standing in the pulpit of the church has stayed with me. And I will never know to what extent that impacted me and affected me, influenced me to go into the ministry. Good parents persist and persevere. I always laugh when people say, well, you know, so what church are you serving? I'm at Highland Park United Methodist. Oh, you know, and that, it speaks volumes. What does that mean? Oh, must be nice where families have no problems there in Park Cities. You know, people actually think that sometimes. As if somehow they assume a certain median income or level of affluence. And yes, that may solve some problems, but correct me if I'm wrong, but it also opens up another whole set of problems, doesn't it? Nobody escapes unscathed from the challenge of parenting. We are called to set clear boundaries. And sometimes as a parent, you have to do tough love and tell your child, this is not acceptable. Your behavior is not acceptable, and if this continues, we will have to cut you off. We will no longer support you. Now, don't do that when they're 2 years old. That you got to give a grace period. Paul gave me permission to share this story with you. Last week, we lost Jim Moore. Jim and June, who were so faithful in their attendance, Reverend Jim Moore, one of our most prestigious United Methodist ministers for so long at St. Luke's in Houston, who came here as an emeritus pastor and preached a lot of sermons. Jim passed away to cancer. Jim was a mentor to me. I used to drive to Houston to go to what I called gym class. I would go meet with Jim Bankson, Jim Jackson, and Jim Moore, and I learned a lot. But for Paul, he was more than a mentor, he was a father figure. Jim was at First Methodist Shreveport, where Paul lived, and Jim's son was Paul's best friend. And Paul recounts how strange it was to go into somebody else's house, and these are his words that he gave me permission to share, and not walk on eggshells. Nobody was liquored up. There was no high drama. No one was yelling or screaming or raising their voice. It was just quiet, serene, and enjoyable. A new normal presented to him. And we'll never know to what extent Jim Moore persuaded and influenced Paul to go into ordained ministry. We can never underestimate the power of a positive role model in a father. My own experience, I'll share with you. I love the fact that there's a Father's Day. I love the fact that you get a new socks or a tie, or in my case, I ordered myself a set of golf clubs, which will come in next week. I love that, and I love the appreciation. But the truth of the matter is, I look back, I don't see any great sacrifice on my part. I never experienced it or processed it that way. I never felt like, gee, no me time for me, old dad, because I've got to do all these things and be with my children. For me, being with my children was some of the most glorious times of my life. Some of the most enjoyable times. The role of being a dad is just so special and so meaningful to me. I confess, I miss being a daddy at times. I differentiate dad, your kids are older, you know, dad, hi dad, stop that, dad. But when your kid is young and innocent, they're very dependent on you and they call you daddy. And I love those times. Your child's trying to ride a bicycle for the first time, and you're running alongside, trying to make sure it doesn't fall over, trying to find that balance between allowing them to figure it out and ride the bike on their own, but at the same time, being there in case they start to tip over. Or watching their first dive on a diving board, or reviewing the spelling words, or all the silly fun times that we would have. I treasure those times. And was reminded again and again, as a dad, not only do you teach your children, but they teach you as well. I can remember my oldest daughter, Ryan, was 3 years old. I was working Saturday on a sermon at the parsonage, studying diligently, constant, chronically aware of the fact that I was the Prometheus, I was the chosen one to configure the right configuration of words to bring the Word of God to the people in the sanctuary the next day. And this required much diligence and much study, and it needed quiet. But my quiet was being interrupted by my daughter. I couldn't really hear her words. I wasn't paying attention, but I could hear the noise, and it was distracting. But then I heard her words to me. She said, "Daddy, you're not listening to a single word I say." And those words hit me like a ton of bricks. I think simultaneously I had the realization that, after all, it is your children who choose your nursing home. And maybe the ones who choose the wording for your epitaph. And at that point, it probably would have read, "Don't bother Dad, he's working on his sermon." And I made a decision after that in response to her. I never worked on my sermon at the parsonage again. I would go up to the church, realizing the answer wasn't to no longer prepare a sermon. That needed to happen. But to be present to my children but not available and accessible was to present them with a scenario in which they were chronically being rejected. "I don't know what Dad's working on, but whatever it is, it's more important than me." So I never did that again. My daughter Jessica would sing with the children's choir in the church. And back in the 80s, there was a law, I think it was a state law, requiring all dads to have these big video cameras that were like Channel 8 News, and you were required to go along with this other like herd of dads, you know, and you were required to record every waking moment of your child, certainly every performance. So I was recording Jessica, and I was zooming in and dreaming about the special effects that I would be doing with the video that I would edit later. And so we went home, and I popped the cassette in, and Jessica was watching, and the entirety of the concert was a close-up on her, and she was furious with me. "Dad, there's other children in the choir. Dad, that's ridiculous. Dad." And the next time we went to one of her choral performances, she turned her back to the audience and to the film crew. So, you know, you can always tell a preacher, but you can't tell him much. But I got the message, you know. And the message was probably a good realization for me. You can either preserve and video something, or you can be in the moment and enjoy it. But it's kind of hard to do both. And somewhere in a storage container somewhere, there's a whole bunch of edited videos on cassettes and DVDs that may or may not ever be unearthed by an archaeologist. But within my mind, there's some vivid memories of the times when I was present and was there that are very meaningful to me that I treasure. Finally, my son Jack was born when I was 40 years old. And my covenant with Jack, it was unspoken when he was a baby, was that I would never be in such a state that he would look around and say, "Oh my goodness, I've got an old dad. My dad can't do anything. My dad can't coach. My dad can't help out because Dad's old." So I've worked overtime to try to engender that. But I also realized that we needed help raising Jack, so we got a toy Maltese named Travis that helped raise him along with us. When we decided to move to Uptown, on Blackburn, that was our first venture to Uptown. And I learned that, you know, I'm a helicopter dad, and the kids need dad's advice and dad's presence, but sometimes dad needs to step back too and give the kid time to place to breathe. And what I learned about Jack was, if it was my idea, you couldn't make him, and if it was his idea, nothing could stop him. So he gave him time to be creative and to be proactive, and it paid off in spades. One day he stepped forward and announced he was going over to the West Village with a guitar, and he was going to play for money there at the West Village. And he had a guitar and a guitar case, and sure enough, he went over there, and he opened up the guitar case and started playing and singing for the people going to the stores there. What made it even more astounding and amazing was that Jack couldn't sing and he couldn't play the guitar. But what he did do was he returned back and he had $6 that he had earned from his little venture as a minstrel in West Village. Jack will never know, did they pay you to sing or pay you to stop singing? We're not sure. Those small, special moments. The poet T.S. Eliot said, life is measured out in coffee spoons. And I think what he meant by that is, don't be looking for the exotic trips or the big, giant extravaganza. It's not there. Life is simply a collection of days, and each day is a collection of small moments. And if those small moments aren't working for you, if you're phoning it in, if you're distracted, if you're looking for a greener pasture, you're missing out. Life is what happens while you're doing all those other busy things. Good dad, step up, embrace it, and get into the moment. My children could tell you right now, my adult children could tell you, that when we would go to a parking lot and they were young, we would start to get out of the car, and reflexively I would say, parking lot, hold hands. You remember that? Parking lot, hold hands. And I would do that because I was always afraid as a helicopter parent they'd be walking around or there'd be some errant driver that might endanger them. So parking lot, hold hands. Until such time as they were old enough that you would feel ridiculous demanding that they hold your hand. That happened 2 weeks ago. My grandson, Sawyer, and I, we went to go get a milkshake at a shopping center. We got out of the car and I started to go, you know, parking lot. And I go, oh, okay, you're 10 years old, Sawyer. I think you can make it to go get the... But as I think about the word daddy and holding hands when you're young, and the goal is to get our young people to a point where they no longer have to say daddy, it's dad, and they no longer have to hold your hand because they're self-reliant and they're on their own. And then I think about the fact that Jesus gave us a paradigm shift about the love and the nature of God, which Jesus said, you know, God is not this distant, remote patriarch or king. But rather, I invite you to say, when you pray, pray this way, Abba, which is Aramaic for daddy. When you're a dad, the goal is to raise a self-reliant, autonomous child who can make it on their own. When we're talking about our relationship with God, we are never going to be independent, autonomous, and self-reliant. And so when the last day comes, and it comes for all of us, and we're our last day of living, when we're about to leave this human existence, our God comes and does not abandon us in the 11th hour, but instead stretches forth his hand, takes our hand, and leads us away to God's kingdom. Protects us, embraces us, and shows us a life that we refer to as eternity. This morning, we celebrate men who step up and experience the blessing and challenge of what it means to be a dad or mentor. Amen.